Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout, a podcast you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. All of our shows archived on our homepage, checkoutjazz.org, produced at hopefully your favorite jazz public radio station, WBGO 88.3 FM. I'm Simon Rettner. Well, the year has come and gone. And finally, we've gotten the chance to assess some of the highlights in jazz from 2019, perhaps most comprehensively compiled by our guest today, the writer Francis Davis, for the annual NPR Jazz Critics Poll. Brings us great pleasure to welcome him to the show, the first time on this program, to talk about the results. And a little later in the show, our very own WBGO's Director of Editorial Content, Nate Chenin, will join us to look at a year in jazz ahead in 2020. What's up, Francis?
Oh, thank you. Hi, Simon. How are you?
It's so cool to finally get to do this with you. I mean, I've been reading your words for every year I've been in this business, which is almost two decades now. From the initial look of things, the results are fascinating, and the findings seem to be uncharacteristic of many of the NPR Jazz Critics polls you've conducted in the past 7 years for NPR, I think, and then maybe another almost 10 years for The Village Voice. Perhaps uncommon results given our uncommon times?
And it's hard to say. Well, first of all, the big takeaway is the number of women in the top 10 and throughout the whole poll. In the top 10, five of the top 10 are by women, which is sort of the 50-50 distribution that people aim for. But you figure it would be a long time coming in jazz, and maybe it's here already. But I don't know. We'll see next year what happens. I was thinking as you were introducing the show, I don't envy Nate trying to predict what's going to happen in 2020. Because I would never have predicted this last year at this time. That somebody as not well known as Chris Davis would win the whole thing. I could not have predicted that.
Well, let's just get right to it. Chris Davis, as featured on your poll, the website, if you go to NPR Music right now, you can listen to this. This is called The Very Little Thing, Chris Davis with Esperanza Spalding and Tony Malaby from Diatom Ribbons.
Thank you.
Diatom Ribbons is the name of the album that came in first place, a total of 260 points and 37 votes. Well, in Nate Chenin's words, Chris Davis is an improviser composer with an instinct of an alchemist.
Yeah.
And made Diatom Ribbons by drawing inspiration from oceanic microbiology, tectonic movement, and piano precursors ranging from Messiaen to Monk to Cecil Taylor. It just so happens that The Checkout will be presenting a concert entitled Live at Berklee Presents the Berklee Institute of Jazz and Gender Justice, where we will be featuring artist Chris Davis. That's February 5th, if you join us at the Red Room, along with Linda Oh and the great drummer Terry Lynn Carrington, who also performed well on this list. And this was also one of your favorite recordings as well of the year.
Yeah.
This made your top 10 list.
Yeah, it did. And thanks for mentioning my top 10 list. You know, one side effect that's not so good of doing this poll is I obscure my own top 10, which is always in the essay that accompanies the poll. But, you know, a couple of weeks from now, I'll remember what finished in the top 10 in the poll. I won't necessarily remember my top 10 with all the positions. It's just, yeah, to poll 140 critics is pretty momentous.
Let's dive into this idea that you mentioned before. The year's top 10 includes 5 albums of women, more than in any previous year, and none of them by regulars on this poll: Mary Halverson, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, Maria Schneider. But we have Tamiko Reed, which also made your top 10 list. We have Anna Weber, Jamie Branch, Matena Roberts. It's just kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, and Tamiko Reed, in a way, is the year's most valuable player. I mean, she's on at least 3, counting her own record, which finished 3rd. But she's on at least 3 of the albums in the top 10. She's also on the Art Ensemble of Chicago's record, We Are on the Edge. And she's also on the Taylor Ho Bynum record. It's also on my top 10. So, you know, that shows that she's really in demand, but also that she brings quality and excitement to everything she does.
Let's bring you Tamiko Reed back to back, the Tamiko Reed Quartet, Old New. This is the title track from her Cuneiform release, and then we'll hear her with Taylor Ho Bynum's Ninetet. Thank you. So there we heard Tamika Reid and Taylor Hope Bynum, Nintet, The Ambiguity Manifesto on Firehouse 12, which received 28 votes total and came in number 8. Go to NPR Music right now and read all of Francis Davis's words, his essay on the music of 2019, the NPR Jazz Critics Poll.
Taking just the top 10, just the surface there of the poll, the oldest musicians in it, not counting the Art Ensemble, who are kind of the ACM and the Art Ensemble of Chicago, are sort of a world unto themselves, and they have a lot of younger musicians on there. But the oldest musicians in the top 10 are Branford Marsalis and Chick Corea. I wasn't even thinking about the foreign-born aspect of this. I was thinking that mostly in terms of my own list, my own number one choice, which didn't make the top 10, is the South African. Originally, he's from South Africa, composer and pianist Abdullah Ibrahim.
Before we get into Abdullah Ibrahim, because I will ask you about that, why don't we listen to a little of Branford Marsalis's quartet from his album The Secret Between the Shadow and the Soul, which came in 4th, and then followed by Chick Corea's trio recording with Brian Blade and Christian McBride, which came in 10th. Chick Corea Trio from his album Trilogy 2. All right, well, let's get into your specific top 10 list. And it definitely warmed my heart to see your number one, an artist that I've worked extremely closely with over the last 5 years, I would say, the legendary Abdullah Ibrahim, now an NEA Jazz Master, and who you call, which I was impressed with, one of South Africa's greatest composers, if not the greatest.
Yeah, and people I know who or from South Africa, kind of back that up, as does the internet, whatever. The internet is often wrong, but I guess my friends are often wrong too. But he is respected in South Africa, even outside jazz circles and outside political circles too. I mean, he was an important person in his opposition to apartheid and his exile in the U.S. and everything. And I'm glad he became a jazz master, because I think sometimes not being born here works against you in terms of Americans can be very possessive of jazz. And Abdullah Ibrahim is just a great, great musician. And he's lived in America he doesn't live there now, but he lived in America for a long time in New York at the Chelsea Hotel, as a matter of fact.
That's right. What tune, if you were to choose one brilliant composition from this recording, what would you choose?
Well, and here's the shame. I don't remember the title, but it's the second track. And I think the scoring of the horns in the beginning is especially impressive.
I think the tune you're referring to off of The Balance in 2019 is called Nisa.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yes. And these are, for the most part, these are older pieces. These are pieces that he recorded in trio versions, or in some cases with his band Akaya. In some cases, solo piano versions. But he kind of wants to take another long look at them, if you know what I mean. And I think, you know, a composer's work is never done. A piece is never finished. As long as you keep playing it, you're going to find different ways of approaching it. And I think that's what he does on this album. The Balance. Highlight quickly two other pieces of music from your top 10 list. First, with Bill Frisell and Thomas Morgan, recorded live at the Vanguard. Yeah, and this is like a volume two or a sequel or something from a record from 2 years ago. And like that record, the first one, this one's called Epistrophe. This one includes John Barry theme for a James Bond movie, and this one includes this wonderful version of
You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, and I thought that the not even the great Sean Connery could bring depth to James Bond. It may have been fun, but they're not exactly depth. But boy, Frisell and Thomas Morgan sure bring depth to it.
Thank you. Have you ever got a chance to speak with Thomas Morgan? I hear he's just like an utter genius.
No. Frizzell I've talked to a lot, but not Morgan. He's turning up everywhere.
Yeah, he's playing with everybody,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Which speaks well of, you know, his abilities.
And lastly, just because I like the left field selections and giving ovation to people deserving, the saxophonist Jeremy Udden, Lazy Afternoon, 3 in Paris.
The tune itself is by Jean Latouche, and a prolific film composer. And it's from a show called The Golden Apple, off-Broadway show from the late 50s, I think. Very late 50s. And a lot of musicians have recorded it, and I mention in particular two versions I really like. One by Cecil Taylor, which is a piano trio thing from about 61, I think. It's on one of his Candid LPs. And the other by the drummer, now late drummer, Pete LaRocca, with Joe Henderson on tenor, from his album called Basra. Those are the definitive versions, but I think Jeremy Udden's is right up there.
Lazy Afternoon by the saxophonist Jeremy Udden from his album 3 in Paris on Sunnyside, coming in number 9 on our guest, the writer Francis Davis, top 10 of 2019. All of this can be found on NPR Music's website. Go there right now and explore all of this music, including Tamika Reid, Chris Davis, Bill Frizzell, and Thomas Morgan.
One thing that really surprised me, and I think I mentioned this, that I felt almost guilty for including records like this, given the emphasis on relative youth in this year's poll, the George Coleman record, the tenor saxophonist George Coleman, who's in his 80s, as is Ibrahim, for that matter. That's just a beautiful record with him and Howard Mayburn. George Coleman was one of these guys that it was easy to take for granted. He played with Miles for a brief period, sort of between Coltrane and Wayne Shorter. And, you know, he's been recorded over the years. And he was part of a whole group of musicians who came seemingly all at once to New York from Memphis. Booker Little and Frank Strozier and people like that. And Mayburn, for that matter, Howard Mayburn. He's the sort of musician who's always taken for granted or seen as a kind of peripheral figure. He's not like the big innovator, but he's just a wonderful player. And it'll stop every once in a while, you know, you hear something by him, and it stops you dead in your tracks. I mean, God, what is this? And then you it's George Coleman.
And rest in peace, Harold Mayburn.
Yeah, who sounds really sparkling on it, yeah.
Do you have a tune that you'd like to leave us with?
Paul's Call, yeah, which I think is based on, it bears a certain resemblance to Miles' tunes, either So What or Milestones.
Go to NPR Music right now and read all of Francis Davis's words, his essay on the music of 2019, the NPR Jazz Critics Poll, the findings, and all of the links there that'll take you in your own musical rabbit hole. Francis, thank you so much.
Oh, can I just add one thing?
Sure.
One of the links is to all 140 ballots.
Okay.
I think it's really important. There are hundreds and hundreds of records that you can see listed. And I think it's important also in the interest of transparency and accountability that, you know, it's not just that a body of experts is saying something's number one. No, this person says it's number one. This person doesn't like it. This person, you know, it's consensus. It's seeking consensus. And I think really, I just don't like it, the downbeat doesn't include individual ballots. You know, there's no way to check on their math for one thing, but you know.
That's why we like our poll.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks so much. Now looking towards the future with our very own WBGO's Director of Editorial Content, Nate Chenin, also the author of Playing Changes, if you haven't read it yet. Nate Chenin, welcome back to The Checkout.
What's good, Simon?
To wrap.
I can always count on you for a book plug.
And I can always count on you to bring some perspective and insight to the music of today. And I have to say it's, besides increasingly becoming more feminine, as we just experienced with the NPR Jazz Critics poll, but also just increasingly more global, as we'll find.
Well, you know, jazz comes from everywhere now. You know, I think there was a time when you could clearly identify it as an American product, and I don't think anyone would dispute the origins and the root of this music and the continuing importance of an African-American expression. But, you know, there's a lot of incredible stuff happening all over the world, and we are witnessing new inflections and dialects and dialogues, and yeah, it's exciting.
What do you want to begin with?
Why don't we start with Jeff Parker? Because this is an artist who I think many of us have heard in different contexts, you know. He's been a part of the Chicago scene. He's well-known in indie rock circles as a member of Tortoise. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about the sort of rise of the International Anthem label and what it portends for cutting edge jazz, etc. Really, Jeff Parker's album, The New Breed, was one of the early success stories for this label, and it helped put International Anthem on the map. And so
In 2016.
So, you know, almost 4 years ago now. And I remember when that album came out, just I couldn't stop playing it. You know, it was so intoxicating. Such an interesting way of dealing with the, you know, quote unquote jazz meets hip hop idea, in the sense that it doesn't feel like he's a jazz musician trying to you know, incorporate hip-hop rhythm or whatever. It's really more process-oriented than that. You know, he got a bunch of musicians together and they played, they looped. He sort of built compositions out of the you know, the sampling that he did of his own group. And so there was sort of this organic process to it, and it feels, you know, very contemporary. So in the, you know, 4 years since that album came out, he has refined his process. He's also, you know, sort of strengthened the ideas of what he wants to say with this group. So The New Breed is now the name of his band, and he now finally has a follow-up coming, and it will inaugurate a new collaboration between International Anthem and Nonesuch Records. So another sign of sort of mainstream interest in this, you know, arguably fringe label and fringe aesthetic. So the album is called Suite for Max Brown. Thank you.
the new breed, Jeff Parker, in the original incarnation of this project in 2016 was written for his father, he would admit, and so he wanted to do a follow-up celebrating his mom's.
And that band includes Josh Johnson on saxophone and piano, Paul Bryan, his co-producer on bass, and, you know, there are some others on this album, including Jeff Parker's longtime collaborator, Rob Mazurek, who plays cornet and piccolo trumpet. And I want to note that there's another album on my horizon that I'm very excited about, which is the return of the Chicago Underground Quartet, which is a band that features both Jeff Parker and Rob Mazurek. And it's their first album in over a decade. So that's another one on my radar.
I'd like to bring our attention to a rising piano star from Israel by the name of Tom Oren. And you might know him because he won first place at the Thelonious Monk International Jazz Piano Competition last year. And we got a chance to present him while he's still in school at Berklee College of Music, finishing up his semester. Part of winning that competition, what comes with it, is a record deal. Which is a great thing for an emerging jazz artist these days.
And Simon, you've heard this record?
I have not heard this record.
I can't wait to check it out. One of the Winter Jazz Fest panels that I moderated earlier this month was about sort of the next 10 years of this music. And a point made by bassist Greg August about the internationalism of the music, he made a special sort of pronouncement about Israel. You know, and he noted that during his travels, he just keeps being kind of floored by just the incredible high level of proficiency and you know, intuition and talent coming out of Israel, and I think Tel Aviv in particular. And so Tom Oren is, you know, exhibit what R or Q or X in that survey.
I really liked his spin on a classic from Cole Porter. Just one of those things. Actually, this is the piece of music he auditioned with coming into Berklee, so he's had a lot of time to think about this, and I think you'll enjoy the arrangement. Tom Oren, the newly conquered recording artist signee, and we'll look out for that recording. I don't know if it has a release date yet, but right here we heard him at Cafe 939, the Red Room at his alma mater, Berklee College of Music, with Kush Abadi on drums and Ilam Friedlander on the double bass. Well, where should we go next? Should we go to another continent?
Yeah, where should we go?
Well, I mean, I think the historic record label, Blue Note Records, kind of made some news with the first signing ever by a South African artist, I believe, Nduduzo Makatini.
He played one of my favorite Winter Jazz Fest sets. I think that was true of a lot of folks. But Simon, you saw him in Cape Town, right? Like you know his music from a while back.
I got to know him at the Cape Town International Jazz Festival last March, and quite frankly, he's not really an emerging artist in South Africa,
right?
Because he has 8 albums under his name already and is a fully established. In fact, he is the pianist featured in Urbis Owerri's breakout recording, Hamba No Malume, which you may have learned about from our Jazz Night in America episode. But he's basically studied under Bheki Masekela, the legendary saxophonist and pianist, and has made quite a name for himself in South Africa. And according to Jem from Blue Note Records, might be the hardest working man in music. That's good news for Blue Note. And what's interesting about the track we're about to hear from this Blue Note debut, which is
Modes of Communication, due out on April 3rd.
You don't hear Nduduzo's piano very much.
Yeah.
He sort of sits back and, you know, if you ever get a chance to see him play the piano, he is on the level of Tom Oren in terms of chops and the capacity of expressing himself on the instrument. But right here, he lets the band do some of the great work, including from our American saxophonist, Logan Richardson. I should also mention that his wife is a core member of this group, Umagugu Makatini. I hope I pronounced that right.
She was great in that Winter Jazz Fest show as well. You know, really, really just a commanding presence. And, you know, and there's an ecstatic sort of spirit thing happening in that music, you know, and it's related to what we associate with sort of McCoy Tyner and Pharoah Sanders in the 70s and Alice Coltrane, you know, but it has a very distinctive South African perspective. So that's exciting. I like when New Yorkers realize that we're not always hip to everything and have to own up to, you know, another scene that has incredibly deep roots in history, and people sort of sit up and say, oh man, how did I miss all this? You know, that's been happening since Nduduzo's signing to Blue Note, and I think it will continue.
I should also mention, as we will discuss in our podcast on the Checkout forthcoming, that he's a healer too, and you can almost hear that in his music.
I felt some healing. I needed some of that on a Winter Jazz Fest Eve.
Well, I have to say that the Checkout has an exciting year scheduled as part of this show and our live events, our ongoing series coming to Berklee College of Music. And I want to talk about one artist featured on our upcoming lineup. But also, I want to make a special announcement with a new partnership with the legendary Jazz Gallery here in New York City, where we're going to be doing about half dozen shows this year. So come out and join us for a party of exploring new talent, new voices in jazz, including Angela Morris and the Anna Weber Big Band, coming April 4th, and a forthcoming recording on Dave Douglas's label Greenleaf as well.
So the big band is releasing an album on Greenleaf?
That's right.
Great.
The album is called Both Are True, coming March 3rd, and we're going to hear the title track.
Weber came in on the top 10 of the NPR Music Jazz Critics poll. So she's riding some momentum at the moment. And I think, you know, people have sat up and taken notice of her composing, arranging, you know, as well as her tenor and flute playing. So, you know, she's definitely like, she's the hot thing at the moment, and she's definitely showing why.
The 18-piece Anna Weber and Angela Morris Big Band Both Are True. That's the name of the album and the tune we just heard. And definitely join us on Saturday, April 4th at the Jazz Gallery in celebration of this recording. The checkout comes to the Jazz Gallery. And so I should also just quickly mention the other music that we're bringing to the Jazz Gallery in partnership with the checkout. John Ellis, the saxophonist, The Ice Siren, featuring Gretchen Parlato and Miles Griffith. That is coming February 15th. We also have the electric super swinging ensemble led by the bassist Harish Raghavan on March 13th.
Great band.
And then we have a Biophilia Records Festival featuring the great piano player Fabian Almazan with his partner in crime, in life and music, Linda O, on the bass, and so much more. So just go to the Jazz Gallery's website and you can look at all those dates.
Hey, speaking of Linda Mahon O, she is a part of an album that I want to throw into this conversation. You may recall that about 5 years ago, there was a very widely acclaimed album by a vibraphonist named Chris Dingman. And he's been sort of in the woodshed and he's been experiencing life, and he decided to pare down to trio format. And so his new album, Embrace, features himself on vibes, Linda Mahon O on bass, and Tim Kuiper on drums. And it was produced by Keith Whitty of Thiefs, a friend of the show. As is Chris Dingman, right? So
Absolutely.
You know, this is just beautiful stuff. You know, I haven't had a chance to spend too much time with this album yet, but what I've heard has been entrancing. You know, just really, really like deep, sonorous melody and harmony and a beautiful ensemble feeling.
On this tune, Goddess, which is why it's so beautiful, is because it's dedicated to the great Malian singer Umu Sangare. And a lot of the record is, I guess, inspired from musical traditions from West Africa. Here on The Checkout with Nate Chenin and me, Simon Rettner, here looking ahead, 2020 in jazz, what's going on? And so I have to bring back, I suppose, one of my all-time favorite artists to the mold, who will undoubtedly make a big splash, but the one and only Steven Bruner, also known as Thundercat, he just dropped a new single, Black Qualls. What's a qual anyway?
I don't know. It sounds good though.
Artist known as Thundercat, Black Qualls, here as we look ahead of music coming your way in 2020. I wanted to bring our attention to another international artist, sort of. I mean, she lives in Queens. Tana Alexa has taken a step by putting out her most ambitious project to date, coming in March, where she's enlisted not only a Balkan choir, but also singers such as Sophia Ray and Claudia Cunha, Sarah Charles, along with her pianist Carmen Staff and bassist Matt Brewer, a 12-piece ensemble performing original music. This project, entitled Ona, is actually an album about women empowerment and takes lessons and cues from her own lineage of powerful women in her family, namely her grandmother from Croatia and her mother as well, with this title track, Ona.
Oh. what they want is feminine. We must be better than just to be equal to. Even when we succeed, we don't get paid like you. Stop all your staring, boy, your disrespectful noise. You're wrong if you think I was born to be a toy.
She fights, she'll never give in. She suffers, she'll never give in. Lessons given to Tana Alexa by her grandmother from Croatia to never give up.
And is Ona a reference to her grandmother? Is that like the name?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
And wisdom from the elders.
There it is. I mentioned to you before that The Checkout will continue its series at Berklee College of Music. And just around the corner, we're going to be featuring a duo that I'm super excited about. And this certainly symbolizes the future of music, too, because this band, which has a history of often partnering with Thundercat and Steven Brunner and a lot of those LA cats, they don't even have a record out of their own. But they're dropping viral videos all the time, including what we're about to hear, just recorded last week at the NAMM show in LA, a conference of basically keyboards and technology and music.
It's the Gearhead Summit.
Exactly. And so we're going to hear a little taste of what JD Beck, who's only 16 years old, I should mention, and Domi, who's 18 years old, what they can do as a duo. Domi de Gaulle is her full name, and she comes from Nancy, France. I believe she's still enrolled at Berklee College of Music, but has already found an agent and is already getting booked around the world, despite not even having a record deal yet, and with the phenomenal drummer known as JD Beck.
Well, why don't we take it home with some Jose James?
There we go, Jose James.
You know, you gotta give the last word to somebody who makes you feel this good. And it's interesting because Jose has an album coming out that suggests the sort of resumption of a conversation. His new album is called No Beginning, No End 2. It's a sequel due out on March 6th on his own label, Rainbow Blonde Records. I don't need to tell you, Simon, that this is a, you know, it's picking up on an album he released in 2013 that really, I think, marked the beginning of a phase in his career You know, he had released Black Magic prior to this. He had released a duo album, For All We Know. But it was really with No Beginning, No End that I think a lot of people realized what he can do and sort of the certain brand of charisma that he has in a, you know, in a groove-oriented band setting.
That charisma bigger than ever with his fully formed afro, too, on stage, as we just saw at Rough Trade at the Winter Jazz Festival.
So this album has, it has a lot of guests, some really notable ones, too, like Aloe Black, Laura Mvula, and then on this track that we're going to hear, Ledisi on vocals and Christian Scott Atunde Ajua on trumpet.
Well, thank you for giving me your love, Nate Chenin, on your picks, what you're excited about in 2020. And thank you for joining us on this edition of The Checkout. Is there anything else that we should be aware of on our radar?
I'm very excited about Maria Schneider's next album. I've heard some of the new music at an engagement towards the end of last year. Definitely looking forward to that.
We got the Artemis coming up.
Artemis, another Blue Note signing. They're releasing their album sometime this year, I think.
And who's an Artemis? Just so that those
oh,
that don't know.
So many people, including
Melissa Aldana, and Anat Cohen,
Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, Allison Miller. You know, it really is a super group, and you know their signing is you know another really good move for Blue Note. The drummer Ted Poor, was just signed to Impulse Records, and he's got an album coming out that will feature, among others, Andrew D'Angelo on saxophone and bass clarinet, and Andrew Bird on various instruments.
I love it.
I'm just stuck, man. There's so much. There's so much coming. So,
yeah, so
I would.
If we left you out, apologies.
Well, you know, keep it tuned into The Checkout. Keep it tuned into Take 5 at WBGO and WBGO.org. We are patrolling the scene on a week-by-week and day-by-day basis. So, you know, this is just scratching the surface.
Well, thanks, Nate. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.